Blog Talk Radio.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught, Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings. And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
By Goddard. Welcome to the live call-in and review show. Take two, if you will. Apologize for last night. I was at my neighbor's house, who they said that their internet was working, and they said I could come over and record the podcast live there. And it apparently their internet was not working the way they thought it was, and I dropped you. So I hope you're joining me again. If you're not, I don't know why. I mean, we're fun. I think I'm fun. I don't know. We'll figure that out today. So again, thank you for joining. This is the live call-in show for the Smoking Musket podcast. I am Bart. You can follow me on Twitter at BartimusPrime19. You can follow Smoking Musket at Smoking Musket on Twitter, and go to www.smokingmusket.com for daily news, notes, and opinions about WVU sports. I'm flying solo again tonight, so I would greatly encourage you all to call in and talk to me, and we can talk about East Carolina and that game, or we can talk about the Delaware State game coming up, or we can just talk about WVU football in general, how you feel, how you prognosticate the rest of the season. You can call the show at 917-932-1765. You can also submit questions on Twitter. Again, that's at Smoking Musket, or on Facebook, like the Smoking Musket on Facebook, and we will take your questions there. So if you're listening on any of those platforms, or you know, follow us on any of those platforms, you can ask questions, and I'll try to answer those live on air for you tonight. Hopefully we are, hopefully we can have some fun and discuss some Mountaineer football. Again, I want to extend all of my, if possible, all of my condolences, prayers, everything to the families, the individuals, anyone who has been impacted by Hurricane Irma or Hurricane Harvey from last week. You know, it's tough. I just went through this this tropical storm last night. It's not easy. We were lucky. My house was lucky that we just lost power and internet access, which, you know, are 21st century necessities. But, you know, you can learn to live without them. You know, we were fortunate that no lives were lost, no damage to the house or anything around us. So for that, I am thankful. And, you know, it's been a rough week for those who live on the coast here in the Southeast. So keep all those people in your thoughts and prayers. If you can help out, please do. I know Red Cross, Salvation Army, you know, any charity that you know that works with people who are in need, you know, reach out and work with them, and hopefully we can overcome these obstacles that now are in front of us that have been put forth there from this Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Harvey, and all these natural disasters. But enough of that. Let's move on to Mountaineer football. Let's talk about WVU's win over the East Carolina Pirates on Saturday, September 9. It was a noon kick for the season opener, the home opener for the 2017 season, as the Mountaineers played in front of a Gold Rush crowd at Milan Puskás Stadium. You know, I think we expressed this with John on the podcast last week. There wasn't a whole lot to think about, talk about, but you know, I was a little concerned. I know East Carolina's not, you know, they're a real football team. They play in the same division as us. So, you know, there are always things that that can happen when you're playing a team who, you know, is still a FBS team. We don't necessarily have that case this week because we're not playing an FBS team. But, you know, it's still one of those things where it concerns me. So I'm glad that we took care of business. And, you know, a 56-20 win, I think that's pretty good. I will take that over most teams any day of the week. Don't care what level they are, I will take it. So the Mountaineers taking care of business, 56-20 at home. We got the opening kick, and from there, it was really a matter of efficiency for West Virginia. Very efficient on the first drive. And, you know, we get a touchdown on Justin Crawford's run, a red zone touchdown, which I think was key for this game because we saw a little bit of some red zone woes against Virginia Tech. Right out of the gate, a nice long drive to get into the end zone for the touchdown. And if you're, you know, if you were watching, I didn't watch it live. I had to watch it on playback because I was refereeing soccer on Saturday. But, you know, if you were watching it live, if you probably had your tensions eased, if you will. I think, you know, any nerves that you thought about the team maybe be overlooking East Carolina or anything, for me, put away very quickly after that first drive. Then East Carolina, though, responds with a field goal. And at that point, you know, good for them. You know, it's 7-3. East Carolina's in the game. And I think that was actually good for the team that East Carolina came out and scored on their, you know, ensuing possession because it forced our defense to make adjustments and to kind of wake up. And it forced our offense to know that we had to score too. And you know, we turn around right then and there. And after, you know, a two minute 13 second drive, eight plays, 71 yards. I mean, these are good drives. Caron White catches a 7-yard touchdown pass from Will Greer. So another red zone touchdown for the Mountaineers. Will Greer with the touchdown pass. He apparently leads all quarterbacks in touchdown passes right now in the NCAA. So that's pretty cool. And then, you know, from there, it got bad for East Carolina, to be quite honest. They go 3-and-out on the next possession after West Virginia takes a 14-3 lead. Mountaineers get the ball at around 47, and very quickly, three plays, 53 yards, touchdown. And this is kind of the point that I think we were all, we all wanted. Marcus Sims with a touchdown pass, a nice long touch. Oh, excuse me. I got ahead of myself. I'm going to drive ahead. That was Kennedy McCoy, 13-yard run, three plays, 53 yards. Regardless, that had a couple of nice downfield passes. Will Greer looked in control of the offense, and Kennedy McCoy, another red zone touchdown to make it 21-3 before the first quarter even ended. And at that point, you know, I don't want to say the game was put away, because I don't think it was, but, you know, from what you saw in the first quarter, you had to be pretty happy because we had three drives. We had three touchdowns. All three of them were pretty nice, methodic drives, except for, like I said, that three-play, 53-yard touchdown drive. But all three of them resulted in red zone touchdowns, which has always been a problem, I think, for this team. So the fact that we took care of business, took care of the football, did not give East Carolina, especially from our offense, we didn't give their struggling defense any reason to get a rhythm or get excited about anything. And I think that was key to the success in this game and hopefully key to the success moving forward for this team, that our offense went out there and proved that we could take care of business, take care of what our job in front of us was. Second quarter starts, West Virginia gets the ball back. You know, at this point, East Carolina they kind of looked hapless a little bit in this first half. Obviously, they got a field goal in the first quarter, but, you know, we score. They get the ball back. They have to punt. you know, they got a seven-play drive, so not like they were three and out or anything again, but they punt to us. We get the ball and we get the ball basically at the start of the second quarter after East Carolina's punt. And I mean, another example of the quick, we were running incredibly quick offense. I think quicker than what we did against Virginia Tech, against East Carolina. Maybe that's kind of one of the things that, you know, Spavital wants to see from this team is a very quick moving offense. Cause I think that we definitely showed the potential to move at a faster pace against Virginia Tech, but we just didn't. And I think maybe that was a week one thing. Virginia Tech obviously is a very good defense. Against East Carolina, we were moving real quickly. And I like that. I think that'll be effective against some of these Big 12 defenses that are not well-equipped to as well-equipped as our defense. I mean, I'm sorry. When you look at the Big 12 when it comes to defense, I only see Kansas State, maybe TCU. That's it. You know, maybe Oklahoma. They showed a little bit against Ohio State, but I don't think Ohio State's necessarily the real deal. So, like I said, West Virginia gets the ball. And this was a nice drive. You know, 6 plays, 81 yards. But really, this came down to what I think we've all been waiting for. And that was Marcus Sims, 52-yard pass from Will Grier. I mean, it was an 81-yard drive. So we started deep in our own territory, which is nice. But, man, that pass – and Will Grier said it after the game. He said that that's just the one thing that Sims brings to the game that no one else does, and that's the speed. And we definitely needed that against Virginia Tech. Not that any of the other guys out there weren't providing us options on offense as a wide receiver, but – you know, just from a speed perspective, you can't replicate that. And Sims showed it, and Grier hits him in stride, and he just waltzes into the end zone for the touchdown. It was nice. You know, it was, for me, probably the best deep ball that Grier had thrown up to that point. So at that point, the Mountaineers are up 28-3, and it just got worse for East Carolina, to be quite honest, because after West Virginia scores to go up 28-3, East Carolina turns around and throws an interception. Thomas Cirque was the starting quarterback. I expected him to play better. But, you know, give credit to Kaiser White with a great interception there. And we get the ball on East Carolina's 31 and quickly convert that. 3 plays, 50 seconds, touchdown Mountaineers. I mean, I don't know what you want. That's the best efficiency you could possibly get. You know, a David Fields pass, another red zone touchdown, David Fields catch, excuse me, from Will Grier. I don't know what more you want. That's incredibly great offensive efficiency, and we're up 35-3. I got a question here from Justin Weber, and I was waiting to get to this point. At MountainMan93 on Twitter, he asks, is David Sills the real deal? He looks good, and I want to get excited about him. I'm just not sure. Help convince me. Well, I'm going to tell you what Dana's basically said, and that's that him being a wide receiver – or excuse me, a quarterback turned wide receiver actually really helps for two reasons. One, he understands what Will Grier wants from a wide receiver. Two, he's a veteran leader. He's been in Morgantown, played for Dana before. He's played in the system before, so he understands it. And I think he's got a good leadership head about him. But, I mean, look, I don't know what more you want. He's dropped, like, maybe 2 balls that he should have caught, and one of those obviously was a touchdown against Virginia Tech. But he's made great catches. He's been very good for Grier in terms of a short yardage kind of across – not quite a slant, but, you know, one of those kind of in-between find-a-pocket, catch-the-ball receivers. Jennings and Sills are definitely showing to be very good, very adept at catching the ball and finding areas where the defense isn't. And I think that's been key for Sills. And granted, I mean, this is a lot of what Spavital's good at is finding space for his receivers. And that's the point of the air raid offense. I mean, you've got, in my opinion, two of the best air raid coaches out there right now, obviously, other than Mike Leach up in Washington State. But, I mean, I don't know what you want me to tell you to convince you that David Sills is a real deal. I mean, he has, in my opinion, shown us, even when he, before he left for the, you know, the year in JUCO, in purgatory, if you will. I mean, he showed us his potential to catch balls and make not easy catches, because I don't think a lot of, I mean, he's made the easy catches, but he's made some difficult catches. Again, that pass to Sills from Greer on this last touchdown to make it 35-3 was a very nice little, you know, it was a short route. It was 9 yards, and he made the route exceptionally well, caught the ball, got in the end zone. That's great. That's great for Sills. It's great for Greer. I think they have a really good partnership. So is he necessarily the real deal? I won't go that far because I don't know, you know, what he has. I won't say, you know, what he has going forward for him, but I will say that he and Greer have something going, and that can't be understated. So thanks for your question at MountainMayor93, Justin Weber. You can, again, tweet the show at Smoking Musket on Twitter. Ask us questions. You can ask us questions on Facebook if you want. I just posted the link on our Facebook page, so you can go comment on that if you want and continue to ask me questions. You can also call in to the show. Please call in. You can call us here at 917-921-765 and share your thoughts about this West Virginia East Carolina game. So West Virginia is up 35-3. Justin Crawford makes it 42-3. And at that point, I mean, I think in my head, the game is over, to be quite honest. And obviously that proved to be. But the fact that then, now I don't think that this was necessarily the point of this drive, because West Virginia got the ball. Let's see, we got the ball at the end of the half. And I don't think that we were necessarily trying to score like this, but, we got the ball off another interception from Cirque. We're at our own 14. It was a nice, interception. If I do recall, it was, I forget who picked it off, but, you know, we get the ball at our 14 and, you know, at this point, I think we get the ball and you're thinking, okay, let's try to move down the field quickly. I mean, we're under a minute remaining, so you want to try to score, maybe get a field goal here. But then Will Greer finds an absolutely wide open David Sills. So again, you know, this is one of those things where Sills found, I mean, it was blown coverage, but Sills found the area. He found the area of the field that was soft in the defense. He caught the ball and sprinted for the rest of the way. I mean, he had to sprint 40 yards or 50 yards to get in the end zone. So no one caught him. That's awesome. I mean, he showed some speed. I think he showed good hands to catch it, good ability on the route, and gets into the end zone. West Virginia takes a 49-3 lead into the half. I don't know. I don't think we really need to talk more about the I don't think we need to talk more about that second half. You know, West Virginia did not, they didn't come out as focused. I think that's the best way to put it in the second half. I don't want to say this to be expected because I don't want that, but you know, East Carolina gets a field goal, they get a touchdown, and all of a sudden it's 49-13. And I think if you're a fan, you're going, oh, this isn't good. But you know, third quarter ends, we get the final score of the third quarter, David Sills on another touchdown pass from Greer. So three touchdowns on the day from Sills. If I count correctly, 3, 4, 5 touchdown passes for Greer. Offense did its job. That's fine. You know, you score 56 points in a game. You win 56-20. Defense is going to let up. I'm sorry. It's just what happens. Greer was then done after that last drive that I mentioned, the Sills pass, and Chugnov came in. I don't know. He didn't do anything that made me hate him. He didn't do anything that told me that Greer is under any pressure as a starting quarterback. But I think we knew that about Chugnov. I don't think any of us expected him to be particularly inspiring, if you will. But like I said, Mountaineers get the job done. It's 56-20. That's a good win. It's the first win of the season. And the Mountaineers go to 1-1. 1-0 at home. A win in front of the Gold Rush. You know, I don't think it was – it may have been listed as a sellout, but official capacity was about 4,000 below that. So, you know, there's that. But, hey, it's fine. We showed our propensity to score quickly. And, again, I liked the up-tempo, fast offense. I thought it worked really well. And I thought that we did a good enough job offensively – or, excuse me, defensively to keep East Carolina – under control until, you know, we just lost focus. I think that's what happened in that second half. Again, my name is Bart. You're listening to the Smoking Musket podcast. This is our live call-in and review show. You are more than welcome to call in. In fact, I got a caller right here, 304-319. Let's bring you in. 304-319, how are you?
Yeah, it's Stat Boy.
oh, hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. I thought I would call in and just sort of talk about, you know, what I thought about going forward and some of the things that I noticed, you know, in the East Carolina game and things to think about as we move forward to what, you know, is going to be a scrimmage, basically. You know, it's one of those things. I know there's a lot of fans who are like, why are they playing these games? Why are they playing these games? And the answer is you can play a body bag game against Delaware State, or you can spend a couple million dollars and play a real team and maybe not win. You know, ask Kansas about playing
right.
Central Michigan.
Hey,
you know,
Central Michigan is 2-0 against the Big 12 in the past 2 years.
That's true. but it's one of those things that, like, an East Carolina game, when that whole series was scheduled, you know, that was a series that was supposed to be an every year game. And if we were still in the Big East or the American, whatever you want to call that conference, it would have been an every year game.
Right.
But, you know, and so then it got rescheduled and they were actually a pretty decent team at that point. That was the Skip Holtz era. With a game that we shall not think too long about. if you'll remember a certain dearly departed coach who we just got like obliterated by that East Carolina team that year. So they were a better team than they were this year. And I will say, just thoughts on East Carolina. I've seen a lot of East Carolina teams over the years, bad East Carolina teams, like the John Thompson years, like the early sort of Rich Rod time.
Right.
Those were really bad East Carolina teams. That was the worst East Carolina team I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, that was one of the worst. That was one of the worst NCAA major division football teams I've seen in a while, just for a variety of reasons. Like, they just – and so there's things not to read into our win against East Carolina. I mean, we clicked off so many stat buttons, it's not even, like, really funny about, like, just – you know, Greer's passing efficiency, you know, our ability to move the ball more or less at will. I mean, we had two punts maybe the whole game. So there's things not to read into that. But we're not going to get any more sense of that this week either. I mean, Delaware State's a bad team. They're not even they're not even like a good FCS team. Like, so this is things to keep in mind as you're watching this game next week, is that, you know, we had a really good game against Virginia Tech, and then we've got 2 weeks of really bad football, and then probably another week of really bad football. Like, Kansas is just, they're not very good. They're not very good. I thought that, you know, Sills played really well. I'm really encouraged by his route running. I thought we saw some glimpses with Marcus Sims that are really, really encouraging. I think if we had Marcus Sims, we probably would have beaten Virginia Tech, because there were a number of those routes where it looked like Greer overthrew them, and he really did. But someone like Marcus Sims, who has, like, just frickin' burner speed, like the dudes in the Fox truck,
Right.
who are not, like, people who are easily impressed, were impressed with his speed. Like, that for one touchdown pass, he bailed Will Greer out.
Yeah.
By
yeah.
just running underneath the ball. So I'm really encouraged about, like, that piece. I think the rest of it will sort of come into play. There were things to be concerned about if you're a Mountaineer fan, I think, from that game. Statistically, we were still struggling on third downs.
Yeah.
Getting people off the field, that's really
yeah.
important. You know, with our depth especially, we're not a kind of defense that you're going to be able to, like, you know, if you see a team like Alabama that can just, like, blitz on every down and can do that, it's because they have really good depth. And we don't have that depth. We're not going to have that kind of depth, I don't think, anytime soon. So getting people off the field on third down, I think, is pretty important for us. That one sort of, like, six-minute drive by East Carolina was, like, their most impressive thing that I saw.
All season, to be quite honest. I watched, it was a very impressive drive
to just, like, yeah. bam, 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 6 minutes, knock off the clock. And if you're a team like East Carolina, that's what you needed to do every time you had the ball if you were going to come away with a win. But
right.
Other than that, I mean, the secondary, everyone should be prepared for some corners getting just crop dusted. I mean, we play in a league where that's going to happen anyway. I mean, if you watch.
We play in the league with the best wide receivers in the country. I'm just going to put it out there. I mean, no other league has the talent and depth at wide receiver that this one does.
Well, and I would say, too, that it just has really good quarterback play. That's something that I've noticed through, what, two and a half weeks of college football, is that, like, the Big Ten, you look at Ohio State, you look at Michigan, you look at some of these other teams in the Big Ten, outside of Penn State, they do not have good quarterback play. And I'm not necessarily willing to say that McSorley's, like, a Heisman Trophy candidate, but compared to, like, whatever is going on in Michigan's offense and what you had with JT Barrett in both games that I've seen JT Barrett, they just don't have good quarterback play. The SEC is sort of the same position. I mean, Alabama has Jalen Hurt or whatever his frickin' name is. And, you know, he's obviously very talented. And Alabama's just like, they've got so much talent around them, and it's a system, and you just sort of plug and play a quarterback in. But other than that, the SEC doesn't have really great quarterback play right now. I mean, the SEC East is just like this no man's land of terrible quarterback play. Whereas the Big 12 right now, if you look at it, you've got Will Greer, who's playing, you know, whose numbers are fantastic. Kansas State's got a good quarterback. Oklahoma State, Mason Rudolph is fantastic in the system that they run and has great wide receivers.
I think Mason Rudolph is the most underrated college football quarterback.
Everyone keeps talking about
Baker Mayfield, and no one talks about Mason Rudolph, who, for my money, is a better quarterback.
I would say so, too. I think Mason Rudolph's a lot quieter as a player.
Yeah.
But Baker Mayfield's great, too. I mean,
they're both great.
Yeah, they really are. And the thing with Baker Mayfield is that he has this sort of, and it's true of any quarterback, like if you like pressure any quarterback just about, you're going to make them, you know, make mistakes. He seems to be more prone to that if you're capable of getting to him than Mason Rudolph is. Mason Rudolph seems more like, you know, a Russell Wilson, in that if you flush Russell Wilson out of the pocket, he's going to make a play on you.
Right.
Mayfield can do that, but he's not necessarily – he doesn't seem as comfortable when you're able to, like, hit him in the mouth a couple times. We were able to do that occasionally 2 years ago. Last year we weren't able to really do – 2 years ago in Oklahoma, in Norman, we were able to sort of, you know, rattle him just a little bit.
Right.
But so I think the Big 12 right now, you're going to see great quarterback play. And as a result, like I said, the secondary, we're you're going to see some dudes just blow assignments. That happened a couple times against East Carolina. The one long touchdown pass was just, again, it was the second half. It was, I think that whole second half is just something to, like, write off. The only thing I would say is that there's a tendency sometimes to not finish people off. As Bob Huggins would say, you had your foot to their throat and you started having fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that was sort of what happened, and that's easy to understand, and that's probably going to happen against Delaware State. I would envision our game against Delaware State going pretty much Carolina game.
Fair.
The one thing I would say, though, to, like, as a point of comparison, like, if you look at, you know, it's one thing to, like, say that, oh, we threw the ball a lot and we did not necessarily run the ball. We didn't run a whole lot of, like, first team. Like, we did not have to really get ourselves what my takeaway from the East Carolina game was, we didn't really have to really get going to just, you know, knock them out. They were
right.
That game was over with in the first quarter. On the other hand, you look at Texas, it took Texas three quarters to put a bad San Jose State team away.
Right.
Which I think that's the difference in, like, this team and, like, say maybe a 7-5 West Virginia team from a couple seasons ago when against, you know, inferior opponents, we just didn't put them away and we didn't, you know, we weren't quite there. I think back to a couple years ago when we opened with Villanova.
Right.
It was during the Stewart year. We had to run offense the whole freaking game.
Yeah.
Won 44-10 or something, but we were never comfortably, like, in command of that situation. So that's something I think that's encouraging for us, is that this team seems to be able to go out and physically dominate inferior opponents, and that's important.
Well, I think that's a result of the recruiting. And, you know, Andy, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate all your insight. I look forward to, you know, your calls later on in the season as we continue to do these live call-in shows. So I appreciate it. I'm gonna go to another caller. We got a guy coming here from 304-282, but thank you, Andy, very much. I appreciate your work for the Smoking Musket, and I will talk to you later. Thank you.
All right, no problem.
So right now we have, 304-282. What do you have to talk about here, that's West Virginia football team?
Hello, my name is John Lowe, and
at least I got people I know calling in.
I just sent in a steaming hot pile of story to the DA, and I have some free time. So.
Yeah, all right. Well, you were there, so you were there obviously covering the game, West Virginia versus East Carolina. And kind of to build on what Andy's last point was, is that this team, I mean, we put East Carolina away very quickly. Do you get the sense that this is a different mindset? I mean, I understand that, you know, they scored 17 points in the second half. I get that. But do you think this team, you know, 49 points in the first half, is that a different mindset than we would have had in, you know, previous editions under Dana Holgorsen?
I don't think it was so much of a mindset. I think it just kind of happened. To be quite honest with you, Bart. I mean, it's what I was telling you on Thursday. It was, you know, get in, execute, you know, avoid a letdown, avoid an injury. And I think, you know, West Virginia very much avoided a letdown against East Carolina, you know, by beating them so bad, you know, 49-3 at halftime. Are you kidding me? So, you know, it's going to be very much the same mindset this week as well. I really would like to see Will Greer come out of the locker room at halftime with his pads off, because this kind of game is not a game he should be playing the first series of the third quarter in. You don't want to risk injury against a team like Delaware State.
Right. And don't get me wrong, you do that against East Carolina for a couple of reasons, and I think Dana touched on it, but you're right. This is one of those, like, you know what? We don't need to have that. We don't need to try that. It's not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, also selfless plug, the daonline.com/sports. Check us out. We got volleyball stuff today. So
yeah, West Virginia just played a match, a volleyball match tonight. Obviously I wasn't able to keep up with it because I'm doing this, but, that happened.
We won 3-0.
There you go.
We won. We won 3. Yep. We beat Marshall. Cause this is the only sport we play him in now.
Well, it's the only sport that matters to play him in.
Yeah,
no point in playing another sport.
It's the only sport that's competitive at that, you know, in this series. So, yeah. Check that out. You know, follow us at the DA Sports on Instagram and Twitter as well. And, we got a good issue coming out tomorrow, and we got an issue coming out on Friday that I am producing all about the club sports and their possibility of becoming D1. So,
did you talk to my boys at the men's club volleyball team?
What?
Did you talk to men's volleyball?
I did not.
They never
got back to me.
That's, you know what? That doesn't surprise me. But good shout on the hockey.
Yep.
I don't know if people know that, like, our West Virginia club hockey team is pretty legit.
They start the season on Friday.
Yeah,
they start the season on Friday against Towson. And, I had a very productive talk with Dr. Jim Mills. He's the advisor of the men's lacrosse team. They look like they're on the track to becoming a Division I school in lacrosse within the next 5 to 10 years, hopefully. All they need is for Shane Lyons to just be like, hey, you know, we want lacrosse. We like what you're doing. And also, all of the various lacrosse clubs in the Big 12 will be gathering for their first ever Big 12 lacrosse club tournament in February. So, that'll be in Waco. So, all that good stuff on the daonline.com/sports. And you know what? Keep checking out the Smoking Musket, because I put something out there every now and then. Bart has
you
good
do.
Stuff out there.
You do.
Yeah.
I don't put good stuff out there. You do.
I haven't put something on the site in a while. So.
I basically report news now. In fact, the article I wrote today was about, West Virginia Pitt, an 8 p.m. tip-off in Pittsburgh on December 9th for the renewal of the Backyard Brawl. Look, I'm excited for that. I don't know how excited you are for, the Backyard Brawl to continue. We got it in both men's and women's basketball this season.
I am ecstatic. And the thing that makes me even more excited is that game is after I'm done with finals. So
you got a good final schedule.
Yeah, my finals, I get my finals done early. So, I am pumped. I am monumentally pumped to head up to the Oakland Zoo and watch West Virginia just kick Pitt's teeth in.
Yeah, Pitt, if we don't do that, we have real problems, because Pitt is not going to be they're not going to be any better at basketball this year than they were last year.
They're going to be worse. Their entire team left.
Yeah,
yeah, they got like one guy there that was there last year, and Kevin Stallings, who I would be shocked if he were there after this year. So.
Yeah, it's not going to be great for those guys up north. I do got one question to ask you about this Delaware State team. Not necessarily about that, but, you know, just from a fan perspective, I think I asked this last year, what do you want to see that makes you feel comfortable about this game? Is it a score line? Is it a stat line? Is it just, you know, a visual? What would make you feel comfortable after this Delaware State game?
I don't really have a specific score in mind. If the final score, because I don't know, we got depth problems. We got depth problems. If West Virginia wins by at least 35, I'll be satisfied.
Okay.
And if we have some of those depth problems resolved, I'll be happy. If Chuganov can prove that he can handle himself, let's be honest, he's like a Skylar Howard light, but. If he can prove that he can handle himself against a team like Delaware State, it gives us hope for games against like Kansas, Iowa State, Baylor, those kind of games. So, that's what I want to see. I want to see, the depth at wide receiver. I want to see that issue resolved. Because below Marcus Sims, Gary Jennings, and David Sills, we got nobody. Karana White's been pretty quiet. I would like to have that kind of resolved as well. I don't have a specific score in mind. I think the one I predicted was 59-14. 'Cause You know, I know a lot of people that are predicting, you know, we're going to hit that 70 burger like we did against Clemson.
I think I predicted that, but I don't actually think that's going to happen.
I
don't know how else to describe that. I think this game is something that we don't necessarily have to worry about whatsoever.
I think there'll be enough that people will still complain.
100%. I'm sorry, but we have Mountaineer fans love to complain. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there'll be enough that there'll still be some complaining out there in Mate One and you know, all those other small, tiny hamlets in West Virginia.
Yep.
So, yeah. A lot of Facebook comments will be not positive going into that Kansas game, which is also a noon game, which I'm not excited about, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that was another thing that came out this week. We know that we have a noon kickoff for the Kansas game. Obviously, that one is in Lawrence, so, yeah, at least we don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that's even worse for them because it's 11 in the morning.
Well, that's what you get. John, do you have time for like an actual question from our Twitter followers?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, Christian Rowe at Rose with two Y's on Twitter wants to know, would we have been better off in the ACC? The question applies to all sports, not just football.
Yes. I think we would have been better off in the ACC.
Okay.
If you're talking, I think with football,
I think football, we're actually perfect. Like from a conference competition standpoint, I think we're fine. I understand that there are issues
in
the Big 12, but.
Yeah. If we were in the ACC, I don't think Dana would still be here. I think there would be a more defensive-minded head coach.
That may be true. Is not fair to Dana because he's become very good at being a defensive run-the-ball coach. But, you know, those first 3 years, he was not.
Yeah.
And that would not have flown in the ACC.
But you also added in, you know, other sports. You know, we would have a competitive men's soccer program in the ACC.
Yeah.
We don't have one because it's hard to recruit a player to say, hey, we're going to go play in the MAC. You know, because joining the Big 12 left a lot of gaps that the Big East filled in some of those smaller sports. And I think the ACC would have filled them almost perfectly. And, from top to bottom, yeah, I think the ACC would have been a better move. We would have still had Pitt on the schedule. We would have still had Syracuse on the schedule. We would have still had Virginia Tech on the schedule. We would have had Louisville on the schedule. So,
yeah, would have had possibly,
you know,
Virginia, would have possibly still had, maybe Maryland doesn't move to the Big Ten. I don't know. There are a lot of
fans. They probably still
would have
moved.
They're Maryland.
Moved.
So.
Basketball would be lit. Oh, my goodness. Playing teams like Duke and North Carolina.
Yeah.
Wow, that would have been amazing. I'm not complaining about the fact that we're in the Big 12. The one thing I hate about the fact that we're in the Big 12 is that as a reporter, I'd like to try to go to all the games. And since, you know, you have to make trips to the central time zone every other week, it's not possible. It's not feasible. We have to do shifts here. If we were in the ACC, that wouldn't be as much of a problem because, you know, you'd just be able to drive to most of the games, you know, except for stuff like Florida State and, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, still. I think the ACC would have been better off. I would have been okay with being an SEC East as well, or the Big Ten East. The Big Ten especially would have been a lot of fun. It would have never happened in a million years.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Jim Delaney, the commissioner of the Big Ten, you got to think West Virginia would at least be better than Rutgers. So
right,
you'd have,
and that's
you'd have
the
Maryland
thing, and all sports.
Yeah, the only thing that Rutgers is somewhat competitive in the Big Ten is lacrosse.
Right.
And that doesn't really move the needle. So if I'm Jim Delaney, I would gladly do a trade. I would gladly trade Rutgers for West Virginia to you know, put West Virginia in the Big Ten. I'd love to play Maryland every year. I would love to play Penn State every year, and I would love to play Ohio State and Michigan every year. So I feel like that'd be a lot of fun to be in the Big Ten East. It would have never happened in a million years, but, you know, it would have been a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think from an ACC perspective, I think definitely for I think football, we're fine. I think we get a – we want to talk about how we should be in a different conference for football because, you know, the Big 12 doesn't have the greatest, you know, national title college football playoff reputation right now. But I'm going to be real honest. We wouldn't have this conversation in the ACC because we wouldn't be competing – I'm sorry, we just probably wouldn't be competing for conference championships at all. You know, last year we got a sniff at it. I know we haven't really sniffed it in football. We wouldn't be any closer in football on the ACC side. I'm sorry.
I disagree. I think if we were in the Coastal, I think we would have a shot. You know, if we were in the Coastal.
Well, I mean, if we were in the SEC East, we would have had a shot. So.
Right.
You know, but.
If we were in the ACC Coast, I mean, yeah, sure. The ACC, people don't realize that the ACC is a lot like the SEC, where one division just really dominates the whole conference.
Right. You have,
you know,
you
the
have
ACC
the
Atlantic with
Florida State teams in the Atlantic, which yeah, that is
yeah,
the division. But I
Clemson,
mean,
Florida State, and Louisville. You know,
you still have Miami, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, you know, Duke in the ACC Coastal, which, you know, I think we're on the whole better than Duke, but Duke had a couple good years. Miami was down, so we probably would have been better than them in a couple years, and so was Virginia Tech. But, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think, we would have the same problem.
I think as a whole, I think you know, let's take out the 2013 season that was canceled because of the war. if you look at the five seasons we've been in the Big 12, well, like I said, I guess the four if you take out 2013, West Virginia would have been competing for a division title in all of those seasons.
Right.
With the likes of Georgia Tech, Miami, and Virginia Tech. Pitt has not really been a factor. You know, Duke kind of a little at one of those seasons, Duke was kind of a factor, but
yeah.
For the most part, it's not that division is almost always up for grabs. So I think, and you know, obviously this is all hypothetical. This is alternate history, but you know,
I think
WVU would have been at least competitive.
No, I do agree. From a basketball perspective, it would have been. Actually, you know, Big 12 basketball is a lot of fun, but I think
it's
from a basketball
grind,
perspective,
though.
You would have had. I mean, it's cool to we get two matches. Been talking soccer too much lately. We'd had two games against Kansas every year. Which obviously is the headline. I mean, I'm sorry. The games against Kansas and Iowa State for me are the two or four best games in the conference every year. You know, West Virginia, Iowa State, and Kansas are by far the three best basketball programs in the Big 12. And when those teams play each other, they're headliners. But it would have been interesting to see where we fit into the ACC, where you have North Carolina, Duke. A Miami team that was pretty good for the first couple seasons we were in the Big 12. Even teams like Syracuse, you know, who have some history behind them. A very tall, rugged Florida State program, you know. The ACC top to bottom, maybe not better than the Big 12. But, you know, when you think about the fact that we would get Duke, Pitt, Syracuse, North Carolina, these teams that have, you know, NC State, these teams that have more pedigree to them, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely from a soccer perspective, from a women's basketball perspective, from, you know, other sports, the ACC is better than the Big 12 in just about every other sport.
I think the ACC would
maybe women's basketball,
basketball,
Big 12 has the advantage.
I think the ACC would have been better for men's basketball. Only it gives West Virginia that something that you didn't really have in the Big 12. I mean, you had it with TCU for a while, but now that TCU is becoming good, you really don't have it anymore. Every game is like a big game. You never had, like, in the Big East, we had that off game against, like, you know, St. John's or Marquette or, you know, or like South Florida. In the ACC, you'd have that same thing against a team like Boston College or Wake Forest or, you know, or something like that. In the Big 12, every game is a grind. You know, every game is a game you can lose. And it's cool because, you know, you get that reputation, and now the Big 12 is the best conference in the country for basketball. But, you know, that's the one thing I miss about being in a conference like the Big East, where there were just so many teams that, you know, not all of them were good. You know, like DePaul,
right.
That was another team that we always beat, you know. So,
right.
You know, that's the one thing I miss. You know, you had that, you know, gimme game and in-conference gimme game every 4 games. So, but, yeah, I mean, this is all hypothetical. I think top to bottom we would have been better off in the ACC.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I'm very happy with the people we've met in the Big 12. I think a lot of, you know, most Big 12 fans are pretty nice people. The people I've interacted with through Smoking Musket, they're fantastic. But, you know, you have to also just factor in the geography of it all. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to make an argument for why we should have been in the Big 12 versus the Big 10, ACC, or SEC. That's just how it's. The cookie crumbles, unfortunately. And, you know, Oliver Luck got us into a conference that still is a Power 5 conference. You know, there is a very real possibility
yeah.
we were going to have to stay in the American. We didn't. We got into a real football conference, a real basketball conference. And it gets us a lot of money. So, you know,
yeah.
We're in a good spot. We're in a good spot.
Yeah.
Anything else from you, sir?
No, I think that the daonline.com/sports at
the
DA Sports on Twitter and Instagram. Please follow us. We do a lot of good stuff.
They do.
So.
They give the best coverage of all West Virginia sports. So if you know if you're a WVU soccer fan like I am, or if you're a volleyball enthusiast, or you know when it gets time, women's basketball or wrestling or baseball, they're going to be there covering. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. We are the campus sports authority on all of the Olympic sports.
That's very true. Yep.
Yep. So thank you for having me on, Bart. I appreciate
it. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it, John.
Yep.
Again, that was John Lowe, a contributor to SmokingMusket.com. And as he said, he's a sports editor for the Daily Athenaeum Sports. Also writes for the Huntington newspaper covering WVU football. So good insight there. Thanks again for the Twitter question. A very thoughtful and conversation-inducing question. Thanks, Christian Rowe. That's at Rose on Twitter. Another one here from at Ears EJ, EJ Lozy on Twitter. Will Bush or Robertson start to get more looks as teams target Sills and Sims? Well, no. And yes, a little bit. I think John talked about it, and this is one thing that, you know, we do have a slight issue with, and that's depth. You know, the receiver position, I'm sorry, but right now I think Greer has, from what I've seen from Greer as a quarterback, he's been very adamant about who he wants on the field, where he wants them, and how he wants them to run. That's one of his greatest qualities, and he and Spav are working together. But Bush, maybe, Robertson, maybe, but I got to be honest. I mean, yeah, Sills and Sims are going to get targeted, but then you've got Caron White, we've got Gary Jennings. So that's four wide receivers already out there. And then you've got, you know, Kennedy McCoy possibly from the backfield. So I don't know how much more you can spread the ball around, to be quite honest. You know, it was a pretty evenly distributed game from Will Greer. You know, from a receiving aspect, we had, I think I counted, let's see, I'll count again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 guys caught a pass from, I won't say they all caught a pass from Greer, but they caught a pass. So, EJ, to answer your question, I mean, I hope that Robertson and Bush get more touches because I think they provide a little bit of spark that I don't think we necessarily get from every other receiver, but Greer seems very comfortable with Sills, very comfortable with Jennings, likes having Marcus Sims to hit on the deep ball. And, you know, I'd like to see how we can fit Sims into some of those, you know, kind of bubble screens or slip screen to get him into space. I don't know. I don't think they're going to get that many more targets, even if teams start bracketing or, you know, hitting on Sills and Sims, because we have other guys on the field who can catch the ball as well, but they're going to have to, because I mean, just to be quite honest, we need to increase the depth at the wide receiver position. So hopefully that we're getting guys out there, you know, like Reggie Robertson, like Ricky Rogers, and don't forget about Elijah Wellman, who's out there as well. So, you know, we've got a lot of guys who can catch the ball. It just comes down to, I don't know if they're going to all be able to get on the field. So thanks for the question. That's at EarsEJ on Twitter. Again, you can tweet us at Smoking Musket. You can ask us questions on Facebook if you want. We will answer those all on the air here. And you can also call 917-932-1765, and I will take your questions here on air and answer them. Or, you know, if you just want to give me your opinions, I'll listen to those as well. I appreciate anyone who wants to interact with the show at this point. You know, we're going to break down a little bit of some stats here, and then I'm going to take a break because I've been talking for about an hour now. And again, thanks to John and Andy for calling in to give me their perspective. I appreciate that. But just real quickly, Will Greer's line, 19 passes or 19 completions on 25 passes, 352 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. Obviously East Carolina wasn't doing a whole lot or wasn't going to do a whole lot defensively, but having no interceptions, huge. 5 touchdowns is great. 19 for 25 could be a little better, but you know, 352 for 3 quarters of work, that's pretty good. I think one of the big things that we all wanted was from the Virginia Tech game was more running. I don't think we ran, you know, people think that we didn't run the ball as much as we should have. And I got to tell you, this game, we ran the ball 47 times. Now, granted, 4 of those were Will Greer kind of, but, you know, Tevin Bush with 9 attempts. So to go back to EJ's question, maybe that's where Bush gets more looks, because I think he could fit in very nicely into the running back rotation. But Justin Crawford with 15 attempts, 118 yards. So that's 200-yard games in a row for Justin Crawford. I expect he will get a third unless, you know, he just doesn't play all that often against Delaware State. Kennedy McCoy, 11 rushes for 50 yards. Not great, but not bad. I'll take it. You know, that's a total of 230 yards rushing is pretty good. Martell Petway, 6 carries, 12 yards. Tevin Bush, 9 carries on 34 yards. So in total, 211 yards rushing. I'm looking at the wrong stat line, but over 200 yards of rushing is pretty good to complement the total of 403 yards passing that we had on the day, which, look, offensively, that's fine. You know, we had the game put away in the first half. There's no reason to have to put up, you know, just do. There's no reason to do things just for stats. You know, let's be fine. We are the 6th highest rated offense in the country, higher rated than Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. We are behind Louisville, Missouri, Texas Tech, Oregon, and Air Force. I will say that Louisville looked all right against Purdue, looked better against who did they just play? I don't care to look that up. Texas Tech is number 3 right now. But, yeah, West Virginia, the 6th highest rated offense in the NCAA. We've ran a total of 170 plays. And I'm going to talk about that when we start talking about Delaware State. But we've run 170 plays in 2 games. That'll play a big factor when we start playing Delaware State. David Sills was our leading receiver, 7 catches, 53 yards. Obviously, that one long 75-yard touchdown run that he, or catch that he had. He had a total of 3 touchdowns on the day. Marcus Sims, 1 catch, 52 yards, and a touchdown. Man, that's a good stat line. Like to see that go up a little bit, though, because I think if he can get a couple more catches, we're going to see him in the end zone more often, obviously. Caron White, 4 catches, 49 yards. And Gary Jennings, 4 catches and 46 yards. Caron White had another touchdown, so there's all 5 yards. Thomas Sirk, 16 for 34, 191 yards, a touchdown and 2 interceptions. So we kept them under 200 yards of passing, or kept Sirk under 200 yards of passing. Then Gardner Minshew came in, threw for 137 yards. Again, I don't know what you make of the second half, but from a rushing perspective, man, it was nice. Tyshawn Dye and Hussein Howe, 71 and 54 yards apiece. Pretty good. I mean, they rushed for 142 yards on 32 carries. That doesn't concern me. I mean, I think we're going to see better running backs in the Big 12, but I also think that we did a good job at the beginning of really not allowing them too many big runs. And I think that was key. We didn't allow too many big plays, and that was huge for West Virginia this game. Tyshawn Dye did have a 26-yard run. That's a problem. But, you know, from a receiving standpoint, or from a defensive standpoint, that's fine. The one that I have a problem with, Trevon Brown, 95-yard touchdown catch. He only had two other catches. So that, you know, busted coverage and inability to you know, stop one play on defense. That's scary. But, you know, again, what do you make from that second half performance? So all in all, a good win for West Virginia, 56-20 over the East Carolina Pirates in a renewal of a, not a rivalry series, but of a friendly competition series. So Mountaineers improved to 1-1 on the season, and they will take on Delaware State this Saturday. I'm going to take a break, enjoy about 3, maybe 4 minutes of music, and, I'll come back and join you all in a little bit.
Mother, Mother Ocean, I have heard you call, wanted to say on your waters, I was 3 feet tall. You've seen it all. You've seen it all. Watch the men who rode you switch from sails to steam. In your belly, you hold the treasures you have ever. Most of them dream. Most of them dream. Yes, I am a pirate. 200 years too late. The cannons don't thunder. There's nothing to plunder. I'm an over 40 victim of fate. Arriving too late. Arriving. Share of grass. I made enough money to buy Miami, but I pissed it away so fast. Never meant to last. Never meant to last. And I have been drunk now for over 2 weeks. I passed out and I rallied and I smoked a few weeks. But I got to stop fishing. Got to go. Just a few friends. Just a few friends. Occupational hazard be my occupation's just not around. I feel like I drown. Gonna head up town. I feel like I drown. Gonna head up town.
Bye, Godders. Welcome back. Thank you for allowing me to take that little break there. here live on the Smoking Musket podcast. I am Bart. You can follow me on Twitter at Bartimus Prime. Follow the Smoking Musket on Twitter at Smoking Musket. Go to www.smokingmusket.com for daily news, notes, and opinions on Mountaineer sports. If you want to call in and give your opinions on this WVU Delaware State game coming up, or if you just have, you know, hot takes or opinions you want to share, you can give us a call at 917-932-1765. I will be more than happy to take your calls on air and or just, you know, listen to you talk, whatever you want to do. I do want to hit on two things before we get into real Delaware State talk. I want to give you a little Big 12 roundup. But first, I just want to give you the stat. We tweeted this out today, but Brett McMurphy, after saying on Twitter, after Saturday's losses, Pitt and Syracuse are the only Power 5 schools that have never had a perfect non-conference record in the last 27 years. So, yep. There you go. Pitt and Syracuse. You know, maybe they're playing decent opponents. I don't think that's necessarily the case. Mainly because Pitt lost to Youngstown State. But whatever. Moving on, we will hit some Big 12 scores. Oklahoma State traveled to South Alabama last Friday and picked up a 44-7 win in Mobile. I don't know why they played in Mobile. I've been to that stadium. It's fine. South Alabama is a school. They are a decent school in the Sun Belt Conference. They're not bad at all. Don't know why Oklahoma State played them at home or played them on the road, but they did. But the Cowboys get a 44-7 victory. Now, this next game I thought was going to go in favor of the Big 12 team, but Iowa outlasts Iowa State in overtime, 44-41 in Ames. Man, Iowa State just not quite there yet. Just not quite there yet, but they gave it a good run. Charlotte, 7, Kansas State, 55. Charlotte has played football for about 5 years. There you go. TCU getting a big win for the conference in Fayetteville, Arkansas against a SEC opponent. They beat Arkansas 28-7. And, you know, that's huge again for the conference. We did not have a great opening weekend when it came to notoriety and, you know, reputation when it came to, you know, college football playoff stuff and interconference rivalries and all that jazz. You know, that's a big win. Arkansas is not great this year. Brett Bielema should be on the hot seat, but TCU goes in and takes care of business, holds Arkansas to 7 points. It was a bit of a shootout last year, low-key shootout, not huge, but low-key. And TCU, again, you know, a little bit of a, to steal a term from the solid verbal, a little bit of a crock-pot performance in that it took a while for TCU to explode for all these points, but once they did, they come home with a 28-7 win. Texas defeated San Jose State 56-0. So Texas does get it one in the win column. They are now 1-1 after their loss to Maryland, which may not be as embarrassing as I thought because Maryland smoked the team they played this weekend. They put like 60-some on them. So that's pretty good. Central Michigan defeats Kansas in Lawrence 45-27. Just when you think Kansas might actually start to do something, they do that and lose to Central Michigan. The Chippewas have now had two wins over Big 12 schools in the last 2 years. Granted, one of those was a weird win against Oklahoma State, but they still beat them. I don't know. I don't know. David Beatty was supposed to improve this Kansas team. They've been recruiting well, and I know that's not going to show in 1 year, but you know, if Kansas wants to be taken seriously as a football school ever again, they need to beat teams like Central Michigan. That's all. Oklahoma 31, Ohio State 16. That is massive for the Big 12. Oklahoma going into what many people thought was a college football playoff contender and, you know, ultimately drubbing Ohio State. I mean, it was a slugfest for a while there, and it was very entertaining to watch. But at the end of the day, I mean, Oklahoma just, they didn't Ohio State just seemed to not be able to do anything against Oklahoma's defense. And I think that was not the way we thought it was going to go, because I thought it was going to be a little higher scoring. But, man, that is it's a huge, huge win for Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield. I mean, I don't know what more you want the team to do other than, you know, really set down. I mean, really, for the conference, they put together a very, very good win. They put together a really good showing. I do want to talk a little bit about Baker Mayfield for a second. You know, look, he's a good quarterback. There's no doubt about that. He has shown his ability to win games. He shows moxie. He can, you know, complete passes. He's good at that side. But, you know, dude, people think you have a very punchable face. I'm just going to be quite honest. And I say this because, you know, I don't think he's a terrible person or anything. But, man, you're not doing yourself any reputation favors. It's just not a good look when you go and, you know, pretend to plant a flag in an artificial turf field in the middle of the stadium. You know, that breeds bad juju, and I don't, you know, that's just not good. And I think you need to remember who you are and what happened this off season, and just be thankful for the fact that you're playing football right now. But whatever, that's one guy's opinion about Baker Mayfield. And then lastly, we'll talk about this just because it's trollable, but University of Texas, San Antonio beats Baylor 17-10 in Waco. I think that's awesome. Whatever. So, we're going to talk Delaware State. Thank you to everyone who's tweeted in. You can tweet at Smoking Musket with your questions, and I'll try to answer them in the about 17 minutes I have left in this show. Thanks to John and Andy, both contributors to the Smoking Musket, for the calling in and sharing their opinions. Both of those guys do work to cover WVU football and basketball, so nice to have their perspective on what many will see as a comfortable or what many will see as a uncomfortable win from Saturday. But let's get you primed for Delaware State. You can call us at 917-932-1765 if you want to share your opinions. Delaware State's a FCS team, so if you know you're old school, this is a former 1AA team. They are not good. They're 0-2 this year. Their losses have been to Delaware and Hampton, and they have not looked good or done anything in at all. Really a struggle. They lost to Delaware on their opening game 22-3. They lost to Hampton 28-15. They don't really know their identity. I don't think they have figured that out yet, but they come into Morgantown for a noon kickoff on AT&T Sportsnet. That's the old Root Sports. So everything else is basically the same. They just changed the name. And Milan Puskar Stadium will probably be another site of what is sure to be a beatdown of this Hornets football team. And I don't mean to, you know, overlook them or dismiss them, because they're, you know, they're college football players. They're fully capable of competing and beating anybody. But I'm sorry. It just, I look at their track record. They're not good. They weren't good last season either. The 2016 season, Delaware State was 0-11. So they're just not good. They lost to Missouri last year 79-0. That was about, I think that was their only major game last year. Yeah. And this year they actually get to play. They play us, and then they end their season, I believe, with Florida State is what it looks like. I don't know why, but they do. And that'll be fun for them, I'm sure. Who knows what Florida State will look like by that point in time. But, you know, it's just not a whole lot to tell you about. Couple guys to look out for, though, just real quick. Mike Waters, number 25, he's a sophomore from Philadelphia, carried the ball 22 times this season, 76 total yards, 3.5 yards per carry. He leads the team in rushing attempts, of which they only have 67. So again, we'll get into that in a little bit, but only 67 rushing attempts this year, 170 yards, not great. Bryson Aline is a junior from Wilmington, Delaware, number six on the field. You'll see him in the backfield as well. He has had 17 carries on the season, ran for 67 yards. So both tailbacks are averaging less than 4 yards a carry against Delaware and Hampton. There you go. I will say probably their best player on offense is going to be their quarterback, Jack McDaniels, number 10. He is a freshman, 6'3", 205, from Lorton, Virginia. He has a touchdown on 18 carries. He's been sacked 3 times for a total of 26 yards lost, but he has 25 yards gained. And that's a weird stat and weird way to say it because you're like, well, he has negative 1 yard rushing. Yeah, but, you know, for a quarterback, it's not fair to count his rushing attempts against to count his sacked yards against his rushing attempts. So we'll give him some credit there. He does have a touchdown on the ground. He's 27 for 58 on the season throwing the ball. He has one interception and no touchdowns, however. But he has tossed the ball around for 321 yards, about 160 yards a game is what that comes out to. So my point is, Jack McDaniels is kind of the best part of their offense, and it's not that great. You know, I don't know how much more to say about this other than we need to take care of business. And it comes down to making sure that we do not allow them to get into any rhythm whatsoever on offense because, you know, they haven't shown any ability to score, but there's that possibility. And I mean that in all seriousness because you don't want to let this team have any hope or faith in themselves when they come into Milan Puskar Stadium. You need to put the foot down early and show them who is boss. And you know, I think the one way we're going to do that is what we did against Delaware or against ECU. We ran the heck out of them with how many plays we ran. I mean, we have run 170 plays in 2 games. So if my math is correct, which has a tendency to not be correct, you know, that is 85 games or plays a game, right? You know, I don't think that is exact, but that's 85 plays a game. Racked up 30 first downs in total against East Carolina. We ourselves, I mean, it just, look, Delaware State, even the opponents, look, I'm looking at the stat sheet right now, even their opponents are only running about, let's see, they're running a little under 75 plays a game, right? And clearly they're giving up a lot of yards. Delaware State themselves run just under 70 plays a game. Against Hampton, they had 69 plays. Against Delaware, they had 56 plays. They're not used to playing with that this level. That doesn't go, I mean, there are FCS teams who can. Look, James Madison beat East Carolina resoundingly. They're the defending national champions. Youngstown State is a good team. North Dakota State, Montana. These are teams that are capable of playing high-level football. Delaware State has not proven to do that, okay? I'm looking at these stats in front of me, and it's just it doesn't look good. And I don't like to write teams off because you still have to play the game. But, look, if you're a Mountaineer fan, you have to expect to win this game and win this game pretty handily. And that's just what it comes down to. Again, my name is Bart. You're listening to the Smoking Musket Podcast. We got about 10 minutes left here. You can call in or tweet the show. Call in at 917-932-1765 or tweet at Smoking Musket, and we will answer your questions about East Carolina, Delaware State, whatever you want. I'll answer your questions. You know, I'm here to talk to you guys. And, you know, I've been doing this by myself pretty much the whole time. Again, appreciate John and Andy for calling in. But, you know, I miss Mike. I miss having a guy to talk to. He's been busy with work this week. So this is why we're kind of doing this one big podcast together because, you know, it was going to be hard to mesh our schedules together. But, again, you can call the show at 917-932-1765. I'd like to hear your takes as well. And like I said, we got now 9 minutes remaining. So, you know, if you're West Virginia, look, you've got to look at it this way. Delaware State is giving up. Let's see, they gave up 226 yards on the ground to Delaware, and only 134 to Hampton, who ran the ball more. Delaware ran the ball on them 49 times. Clearly, that's what Delaware is doing. But I got to be honest. Look, if you want to make sure you put this game away and don't, you know, have a low risk of injury and all this stuff, run the ball. They've shown that they're giving up a lot of yards on the ground. You know, let's shorten this game and get out of there quick. They do average giving up 16.5 yards per catch, which that is something that all of our receivers can definitely take care of. You know, Marcus Sims could have two or three touchdowns this game. Sills could have two or three. Jennings and White each could have, you know, two or three. I know that's a lot, but, you know, you could have anywhere between one to three touchdowns each if you take advantage of a defensive backfield that clearly is not doing a good job of shutting down the big plays in the passing game. You know, the biggest improvement I want to see this week, and this is all seriousness, I want to see our special teams actually look and control the game. Mike Molina was 0-for-2 last week kicking. That's just not okay, in my opinion. It's just not. Yeah, he made every, you know, he made all of his extra points. That's fine. But Mike Molina missed both field goals that he attempted, and they weren't long. They were, you know, 45 yards each, I think. That's not exceptionally long. I would like to know that he has a little bit of range to him, because I don't want to have to, you know, think about having to go for it when you're outside of the 25. But I would like to see out now. Granted, we might not have to kick field goals this game. That would be okay too. But I just would like to see a little bit better control from the from our special teams. Billy Kenny did better in the punting game. We had, you know, two inside the 20. He had a 50-yard punt, but he averaged 40 yards on his four punts. So, you know, not a big body of work, but I would just like to see more control out of our kicking game, because I think that if you're playing a team like Delaware State, the best way that you can get them in the game is a kick return or a missed field goal or anything like that. Again, you can call the show and give your opinions. It's 917-932-1765. You can tweet us at Smoking Musket. You know, I'll take your calls. We got 5 minutes left, so hopefully we can get them in before, you know, the end of the show. I'm still learning how to close out this show on live air. It's been a while since I've done. Yeah, it's almost been 7-8 years since I've actually had a hard end to a show that I did. So it's been a little bit weird for me to get used to it. And I had a guy in my ear telling me when it was going to end. So, you know, there's that. If you go to the games or if you're tailgating or anything, make sure you send the Smoking Musket your pictures. And I know that sounds a little weird, but we do this thing called Fan Pick Friday. And, you know, we want to showcase our fans and, you know, the fun times that we have. Again, you know, the fun times we have as fans. I mean, I think our fan base is really cool. You can send those to – I think I'm going to botch his email, but I'm pretty sure it is – at wvunitesbn@gmail.com. That's at wvunitesbn@gmail.com. Our contributor, WVUnite, Jake Lance, does that. You can also tag us in your photos on Instagram. We are on Instagram at Smoking Musket and on Twitter at Smoking Musket. And you can go to at WVU Knight on Twitter as well and send him pictures that way. So just a little thing we do, you know, we put up a gallery of, I think we have the one up right now of the Virginia Tech game, which is really fun. So, you know, send us your photos. We'd love to include you in our fan pick Friday. You can also, if you really want, you can try real hard. You can probably hashtag Hail WV or hashtag Smoking Musket and get on the Smoking Musket retweet that Brandon Pretty does for us every week, catching up on the last week's action on Twitter. So, talked about Delaware State. I kind of predict a 70-10 win. I got to be honest. I don't think that's going to actually happen. I don't think we're going to have to score 70. It's really hard to score 70 points in a game when you're not trying. And I don't think we're going to have to try to score points. And I don't think there's going to be a need in the second half to have any of our starters in. And I think that will greatly affect how we, you know, how we score. So before we, as we move on, that's just my prediction. I think we, you know, we get a big win. And I think we're going to see people leaving probably at halftime to go out and party. It's a noon kickoff again on AT&T Sportsnet between the WVU Mountaineers and the Delaware State Hornets. Now, before I leave, let's run down the Big 12 schedule for the weekend. Oklahoma State, the Cowboys, we are all Cowboys fans this Saturday as they travel to Heinz Field to play Pitt. For a noon kick on ESPN, Oklahoma State is a 13.5-point favorite. I kind of like them to cover that. Haven't seen any real ability from Pitt to score. They did do a good job of holding Penn State's offense, but I think Oklahoma State covers in that noon kick on ESPN over Pitt. Kansas takes on Ohio in Athens at noon as well on ESPNU. Ohio is a 7.5-point favorite. I don't know if they cover. I don't think either team is particularly great. So I would take Kansas to cover the 7.5-point spread. Iowa State at Akron noon. Again, why is Iowa State playing at Akron? Whatever. At noon on CBS Sports Net, Iowa State is a 9.5-point favorite. I think from an offensive perspective, they can cover that. Akron has not done a good job of really, you know, stopping anyone this year. Baylor travels to Durham to take on Duke at 12:30 on the ACC network. Duke is a 14-point favorite. I think they can cover at home. The battle for the Big Iron Skillet, or whatever they call it, TCU hosting SMU at 3:30 on ESPN. TCU is an 18.5-point favorite. I don't know if they cover that. SMU-TCU is a tough, close game. I think both teams are going to be able to score a lot of points, but I also think both defenses are going to get a couple of stops and takeaways. So I don't think TCU covers the 18.5-point spread against SMU. I think they can win, but that's a big spread for that game. Tulane at Oklahoma at 6. It's not on television anywhere, so I don't know where to, how to tell you that. Oklahoma is a 33.5-point favorite. Don't know why there's a betting line on this, but there it is. Kansas State at Vandy, 7:30 kick on ESPNU. Kansas State is a 4-point favorite. I take Kansas State to cover that. I think they can out. They do will do what Vandy wants to do, but better. Arizona State versus Texas Tech at 8. Texas Tech is a 7.5-point favorite. I don't know if they cover that because I don't think either of these teams are going to be able to stop either one. So I think we're going to see like a 56-54 win for Texas Tech at home. Texas at Southern Cal, the big game on Fox at 8:30. USC is a 15.5-point favorite. They just announced a sellout. I think Southern Cal rolls on Texas, but who knows? I don't know if 15.5 is that big. I don't know. It's kind of a big spread, but I think they can cover that. So that is your Big 12 rundown. Again, thank you very much for listening to the Smoking Musket. You can follow us at Smoking Musket, and I am Bart Keeler. Goodbye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.